then. We got all of our things out of the way.
All of our things are out of the way, and we're ready to talk.
So we have an hour to talk, and you have an hour to ask us questions via a number of different ways. You can call us at 970-241-8801, extension 1, and ask us any kind of question you have regarding technology. Or you can Twitter us at Talking Digital or at Help Me Rick. And we'll be monitoring our Twitter for the next hour. And if you have a question, feel free to run in there and type one away on Twitter if you have a Twitter account. Or, again, you can call us, 970-241-8801. This is a radio show. Give us a call and just push extension 1, and we will pick up and answer your question. I do have a Twitter question here, Adam, from his handle is IckyBod98.
Okay.
And looks like a nice fellow here, if that's his real picture. And he says he's afraid to try Chrome because new things ruin my day.
Interesting. Interesting.
And this was interesting because right before the show started, before I looked at Twitter, Adam said, why don't we talk about browsers today?
Yeah.
And so what is a browser?
Okay, well, the web browser is, simply put, it's the program you use to look at the internet. Most people, or I don't say most people, a lot of people, statistically speaking, most people don't realize you can use different programs to see the internet.
Right. I'll finish up while you get the call.
Yeah, we've got a call here. We've got somebody who's probably been waiting for us to come on. Hi there. You're on the Noontime Public Affairs with Rick and Adam, all about technology. What can we do for you?
What's your name?
My name's Adam.
Adam, hey. Do you know what a browser is?
Excuse me?
Do you know what a browser is?
Yes.
What is a browser?
Well, my question is, how does a person determine when it's time to buy a newer computer?
Oh, what a great question.
It's a good question. We have a standard answer.
Mine's about 5 years old, and I'm just wondering, how do you determine when it's time to do that?
Well,
I'll get the answer off the air.
No, okay. All right.
Oh,
well, he's gone.
He's gone.
All right. We'll answer his question, but I think we've got somebody else calling through, too, so let's go ahead and answer that. Hi there. You're on Noontime Public Affairs with Rick and Adam, all about technology. What can we do for you?
Well, hi, Rick and Adam. This is Rover.
Hello. Rover from Iowa, right?
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas.
Oh, Las Vegas. Did you used to live in Iowa?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right, well, welcome aboard. How can we help you today?
Well, I just wanted to, call in and say hi. It's been a while.
Yeah. You still keeping that list?
Oh, yes.
Rover keeps a list of every computer-related talk show. And it's not just radio, right? Do you cover podcasts and stuff, or just radio shows?
Just live streaming.
Okay.
My IP address keeps changing on me, so if someone wants the list, they could email me.
Okay.
Is it okay to give it out?
Sure.
That's all up to you, but it's I think you're safe to do that. Sure.
Yeah. If anyone would like to list, just email ussrover@gmail.com, and in the subject line put show list.
Okay.
And you don't have to write anything, and what I'll do is I'll send you an email back, and you'll have a link to my show list page, which right now you can get Open Office, or go to the Zoho link if you want to export the Excel list for those that run Microsoft Office.
Very cool.
Excellent.
Very cool. And I think we still have the link on our website, and if not, send me an email, Rover, and I'll make sure to get that back up there.
Well, like I said, it keeps, I've got a router that I've modified using the DDWRT. Because some of the customers that we have, that use our wireless couldn't pick it up, so I had to increase the output on it.
Gotcha.
So I had to use the modification.
Okay. Well, good deal. So if they just email you, they'll get you that list. So that's terrific.
Right.
Okay, Rover, well, we appreciate you calling.
You guys have a good afternoon. I'll be listening online.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Rover's been following us since the early days of the shows,
and
he maintains a pretty extensive list of all technology-related radio shows and webcasts and podcasts and things like that.
Yeah,
so
it's
very cool.
Glad to have him out there. Now,
let's go back to
the original question.
Yeah, Adam asked, when do we know when to recommend a new computer, when should somebody think about replacing their computer. And this is one area where you and I agree pretty much 100%.
I think so.
Don't you think?
I think so.
So I usually tell people when it stops providing the needs that you want to do.
Yeah.
Like maybe you get a new program that the old computer just doesn't run, or maybe you want to do digital photography and your old computer doesn't have a SD card slot and the USB ports are slow and you just decide it's too big of a hassle to upgrade, those kinds of things. What do you think?
The only thing I would add to that, I completely agree with you. I believe that obsolescence is a relative term, that computers don't go obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
They go obsolete at the point that it no longer does the things that you need it to do. Then it's obsolete. And that can, for some people, a Windows 95 computer will do everything they need it to do.
And you and I both have clients that are running Windows 98. And I don't have any Windows 95 anymore.
I don't think I have any 95s anymore. But it's been recently that I've switched over, very recently, within the last 6 weeks probably, that I've changed over. That I had a Windows 95 customer.
Wow. Because I have a few 98 people that get along just fine. Because all they're doing is email and internet.
Yep.
And they don't care to do anything else.
That's it. But the only thing I would add to that is, if you wait too long, let's say you wait 10 years, the one thing you need to be aware of is that you're going to be going through quite a bit more of a learning curve than somebody who changes out their computer about every 6 years or so. And that's not me recommending that you change that often. That is just something to realize, that computers change so quickly that the longer you wait, you do have to be ready, and you have to keep open mind about it, because when you go to that new computer, if you're used to Windows 98 and you switch to Windows Vista, Vista's a great I don't want to say it's great, but it's stable. It's, you know, it works. It
does the job. On the newer computer now, yeah.
And so Windows Vista's okay. It's acceptable. But that change in the way Windows Vista works from the way Windows 98 works, to some people, it's worth the money to stay caught up a little bit and change their computer about every 5 or 6 years, just so that they don't fall that much behind over the course of the next 10 years. But that all depends on the person and what your attitude is towards change. I don't mind changing one bit.
So. Well, and I think if it's a person that's using a Windows 98 or an older computer, if they're just browsing internet and word processing, there's not going to be a lot of change.
No, that's very true.
In those programs.
Right.
Now, if you're doing a lot of saving files and you do rely on some software that you use all the time, like maybe Photoshop Elements or something like that, if you skip 5 or 6 versions, it's a pretty big learning curve.
And one thing, a lot of times people use a new computer as an opportunity to learn new things, and then they hate the computer because it's so hard to learn. And what they need to realize there is, when you switch to a new computer and then you take on new things as well, you kind of need to, you know, take a good look at it and realize how you're doing it. And the fact that you're learning new things is a lot of times more painful than adapting to a new computer. Computer is going to do all the things the old computer will, but learning digital photography when you've never done digital photography for, that's not the computer's fault that digital photography is difficult on that particular computer. It's just something new.
Right. I agree. So that's in the nutshell, is when it stops doing the job that you need it to do, that's when it's time to look for a new system. But other than that, but also at the same time, if your system's still operational, by all means, don't just throw it out on the curb. Refurbish it, put a Linux on it, or reformat it and put your old Windows on it, and give it away to a family or a friend or someone that doesn't have a computer, and it'll work perfectly functional for them, and they'll be very appreciative of it. And because computers, as Adam just mentioned, they don't get outdated in terms of the hardware. They can. In fact, I was at the Sentinel this morning, and a gentleman in there that's an electrician helps keep one of their inserters up and running.
Uh-huh.
And he called me in to look at one of their hard drives from 1994.
Yeah.
And then I was amazed that some of the equipment they have down there is pretty darn old.
Yeah.
But it just shows you that it is pretty durable stuff overall, and will last many, many years.
Yeah.
So usually we outpace the needs of the computer more than the computer outpaces what we need, if that makes sense. All right, our phone number, 970-241-8801, extension 1. This is the Noontime Public Affairs with Rick and Adam. We're talking technology here today, and we're ready to answer any of your questions. So give us a call. We'll be glad to talk to you.
Now, we were briefly talking about browsers. And I just wanted to mention to people today, and I don't know if we'll spend the whole time on this, but I did want to spend some time talking about the different browsers out there and why you may want to consider changing the internet browser that you're using.
Okay, no, we've got to recap because we did a lot of things. Mm-hmm. A browser, basically, I the best way I've come up with lately to kind of explain a browser is like a TV set.
Okay.
In your home, if you have more than one TV set, chances are you have more than one brand of TV sets.
Right.
You've got an RCA, you've got a Samsung, you've got a Sony. All of those televisions do exactly the same thing.
Right.
They receive television signals. You can watch Oprah on your Sony. You can watch Oprah on your Samsung or mm-hmm. Oprah on your old Magnavox. They all work the same. So in the computer world, a browser is like a television set. They
right.
all do exactly the same thing mm-hmm. and will receive the same information.
Exactly. And I, same thing. I've used the analogy of a phone book before. You call the same people. You still use it the same way. So the difference is in how easy it is to use, how much does it make sense to you, things like that. So a browser, just the program that lets you see the internet. That's all it does. Mm-hmm. Most people use Internet Explorer.
The big blue E.
As their web browser. It's a big blue lowercase e that's on your desktop. A lot of people use that, and since so many people use it, the result of that is bad guys, when they want to write viruses and want to write spyware and stuff, generally they target the code that Internet Explorer uses to put the internet or read the internet together.
Well, and one other quick thing that just to interject here is the Internet Explorer is the only browser that uses a technology called ActiveX. And that's some of that programming language Adam is talking about that allows us to do cool things on the internet. But unfortunately, it allows the bad guys to do many more things that are not cool.
Yeah.
And in the long run, there's very few websites anymore because of the ActiveX problem that you really have to use Internet Explorer
right.
for.
Most people have found ways around the ActiveX technology and found ways to do the things that they want to. So we want to talk about some of the alternative browsers out there that people have. Another browser that people might use that you don't realize is just Internet Explorer is if anybody out there is still using AOL. A lot of people using AOL, it's a tweaked version of Internet Explorer. It just doesn't look anything like Internet Explorer. But those are some of the common browsers out there. Another one that we've talked about for years that is wonderful. We were actually live on the radio the first time we tested it. I just decided I was going to try Mozilla Firefox, and while we were doing the radio show one Saturday, we started doing this review of Firefox, and we were so blown away by it that was about the last time we really used Internet Explorer, either one of us. And so we've used Firefox heavily for the last, I don't know, 4 years, maybe
oh,
a little bit more than that.
Yeah, because we've been off the air 2 years from
yeah,
the national
Yeah, so it's probably
show.
Been 6 years, maybe?
Seven years, easy.
So we've been using Firefox for a long time. And Firefox is great because it does all the things Internet Explorer does, lets you see all the same web pages. But it has the advantage of being a little bit speedier, I think, definitely safer. And it also incorporates very well a feature called tabbed browsing. Now, a lot of browsers use tabbed browsing. But what it does is it allows you to open up your links. When you click on a link, it doesn't replace the page you're looking at, but it opens the page that you clicked on up in a whole separate little tab up at the top so that you can actually have 5 or 10 or as many pages open as you want to all at the same time. And then switch between those web pages across the tabs across the top, which is great for things like eBay or if you're doing comparative shopping on Amazon.
Or just searching the internet.
Right.
Instead of have to go into one page, click on a link, and then go back
to your Google search and you want to open 3 different pages that came up, just mm-hmm. open each one in a new tab and you can have them all open at the same time. Let's take a phone call real quick and we'll get more to that in a second here. Let's go. Hi, you're on Noontime Public Affairs with Rick and Adam on KFM. What can we do for you?
Hi, I agree with you. I've been using Mozilla for a long time. It's a great product. I'm having a hard time finding OS X for one of my Macs. You know how to get a hold of that?
You're looking for what version?
10.
You're looking for the very first version, you mean, for like an older laptop?
Older Mac G3. It's for a friend of mine. She needs something to be able to use.
I'd have to say maybe eBay.
Yeah, that's all.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the only place.
eBay, and make sure it's a legitimate copy. That's the other thing, too. You want to make sure that, and that's sometimes a little bit difficult to do, but it should be. I mean, usually you can tell the reputable people on eBay fairly easy, but you're going to be buying a used copy. I don't think you're going to be able to buy a brand new copy of it.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much for your service.
Well, sure, you're welcome. Problem. Appreciate the call.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
970-241-8801 is the phone number, extension 1, or you can Twitter us at Help Me Rick or at Talking Digital, and we'll answer your questions via Twitter as well. back to the Firefox and tabbed browsing, mm-hmm. we do have a, on our website at helpmerick.com, if you just search for tabbed browsing, there's a great tip there, including a video tip to visually show you what Adam just explained.
Right.
So make sure you visit the site and you can watch that video.
Another feature that Firefox has added with their latest version, or one of their latest versions, is a thing called the, do they call it the Wonder Bar? Is that
the Super Bar.
Is that in Firefox?
The Super Bar.
Super Bar?
I think they call it Super Bar.
I think they call it Wonder Bar.
I don't know.
One, anyway, everybody calls
it's different,
something different
from the Wonder Bra.
It's a little, yeah, different. It's this little address bar. You know, the address bar across the top of the screen where you type in the address, like www.amazon.com. Mm-hmm. Well, they've also changed that so that you can bookmark from it. So there's a little star up in the top, and you can click on the little bookmark icon, which is little that little favorite star.
Mm-hmm.
You click on that, it will add it to your favorites or to your bookmarks. Same thing, just different word. And when it adds it in there, it also gives you the ability to put a keyword in there or keywords. You can type in those keywords or tags is another thing they call them. Type in those keywords, and that way the next time you want to find the websites, let's say you do a lot of investing, you can make a tag called stocks or a tag called investing. Then you just go up to that bar at the top, type in investing, and it will bring up all of your favorites with that keyword.
It's awesome.
It's very much...
Maybe they call it the awesome bar.
The awesome bar. That's
is that
it.
What it
the
is?
Wonder bar, I think, is in... Is in
Safari or...
Is it? No, the
IE?
Chrome, I think.
Oh, Chrome.
But well, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It's the address bar. But the address bar has this has that
address
added
bar on legal steroids.
There you go. But it just has that added feature of being able to do bookmarks from it and tags, which means you don't have to subdivide your bookmarks anymore into different folders.
Not
and all that,
that many people did.
Yeah, that's true. But but just making tags makes it a whole lot easier. In the shorter terms, it just makes it easier to find what you're looking for. The other thing it does is any website that's in your address book, if you start typing Amazon, it will automatically show up at the top of the list if it's something that's in your, sorry, I said address
in your
book.
History.
If it's in your history or in your bookmarks,
right.
The bookmarks show up first.
Well, and you also missed one of the biggest things that why I stay with Firefox
uh-huh.
is because
extensions.
Of the extensions.
Mm-hmm.
And an extension in Firefox, and Internet Explorer is starting to bring it in a little bit. We're going to talk about Google Chrome in a minute. They're thinking about doing it. But what extensions do is let you add on small little utilities or programs, which normally I'm adverse to, but they're small things that you can add on to your browser to make things either run easier, run faster, or give you information at a glance. For example, one of my favorites is I'm a big weather bug, and I love to have in my little what's called the status bar at the bottom of the browser, I have the current temperature and the next two or three days forecast, and a little pop-up, if I want it, radar of the region. And they call that, I think it's called Fox Weather, Weather Fox, or,
yeah.
or something like that.
Yeah.
The other one that we used a lot when we had our old Drupal site was what was the little editor program? I even forgot what it is. We don't use it anymore. You right-clicked and we got the little editor.
Oh, yeah.
What was that? Zina. Zina. X-I-N-H-A or something like that.
Yeah.
But they're just little add-ons. And so if you have a specific need or a
right.
or a function that you like to access often, oftentimes there's little add-on program.
There's one that I use for eBay a lot when I'm showing people
yeah,
what extensions
me.
Do.
Mm-hmm.
And my little eBay extension converts all of the... times into
that you see on the eBay auction.
Yeah, normally it's Pacific time, but it automatically converts all of the times
to
into
your,
whatever time zone you're
mm-hmm.
in. Plus, it gives you a countdown clock
so, nice.
With seconds, so you can sit there and watch exactly how much time is left in an auction. So it does some cool things like that. There's just a lot. I have a little Twitter add-on that I put in there called
Twitter Fox.
I think
that's the one I use.
Yep. So there's a lot of them.
It's very cool. So, but now let's go on to the newest browser.
Yep.
From Google, it came
right.
out about this year, about this time last year.
Right.
I think it's about a year old now, right?
Yeah, probably about that.
Or pretty
yeah,
close.
I'm not sure.
And it's
exactly.
called Google Chrome.
Yeah.
And you may even have an icon on your desktop. If you've downloaded the Google Desktop or Picasa, or most of the time it comes alongside, for sure, Google Earth.
Yeah.
And if you didn't watch when you were installing, it asked you, do you want this? And most people just go ahead and click next, next, next. And you might already have the Google Chrome icon on your desktop. And it is, just like everything Google does, a very small, very efficient, very fast browser. And it's a very minimalist browser.
Very.
And,
yeah.
And that's what I love about that.
It is. Chrome is my default browser. I use Chrome for everything. I still use Firefox. I actually have two monitors. And I have two Google accounts. I have one that's a spam kind of account where I use a lot of, I use that most of the time. But I have another Google account that's more related to my business and my personal stuff. And so I make the business and personal stuff open up in Chrome. Firefox on my left monitor, and I make Google Chrome open up on my right monitor. Three things, so I'm not going to list them number-wise, but there's several things that keep me hooked on Chrome. The first one you mentioned is the speed. There is, hands down, it is blazing fast. It's like changing channels on your TV set for getting from one website to another. And one thing I always take people to is I take them to CNET.com or
ESPN's a good
ESPN.com or FoxNews.com. Take them there on Internet Explorer, and then I take them to it on Chrome.
Because typically those are very slow sites, even on a high-speed
connection.
Lots of
video, lots of things like that. So it takes a long time for them to load, and it is just so much faster. There's no comparison. It's so much quicker.
Now, Safari, Apple had just released Safari for Windows last year about this time as well. And now they just came out with their new version. I haven't tried it yet.
Safari 4. And it's very, very fast.
Have you seen it?
Yep.
They're claiming it's fast.
I've played it. It's very fast. I would compare it to Chrome.
Would you?
It also has, as far as the speed goes, it's based on WebKit, which is actually what Safari and Chrome are both based on, the same browser.
The same underpinning.
Same basic browser. There's the Mozilla one. There's the Internet Explorer. And there's WebKit.
Which is what they use on mobile phones.
Yeah, that's what I. Yeah, right. WebKit is what I've got on my Palm Pre. The nice little, goes real fast. Anyway,
that no longer works with iTunes.
Yeah, I don't care. I never did anyway. Nobody.
That's okay. We'll get into that
last.
Later.
Anyway, but it's based on the same engine. Now that, as with anything Apple, the Safari is a little bit more flashy. Your bookmarks look like your album. Album flow or whatever they call
cover flow.
Your iPod. So it's more graphical. It's pretty. It's got a cool homepage. But when it all comes down to it, I'll tell you what keeps me with Chrome, and that's that I like Google more than I like Apple. Mm-hmm. So I tend to use that one. And it's just so fast. The other thing that that any WebKit browser does, whether it's Safari or Chrome, is it lets you use your address bar as the search bar. And that's one thing that I've found has been... I've been helping people change over. So many people do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That I've really found to be helpful. Basically, what it does is it removes your main homepage. So instead of logging in, and by default, instead of logging in and going straight to Bresnan or straight to Google or whoever, it comes up with a three by three grid of the nine places you go to the most often.
And it changes based on how often you visit those
sites.
The
more often you go to those sites. And then the bookmarks are very easy to find. They're over at the right-hand side. But if you go up to the top and you type puppies, it's not going to go to puppies.com or tell you that the website doesn't exist. It's going to come up and give with a Google search for puppies, which is what a lot of people want anyway. And so it just works so clean, so quick, and it's responsive. The tabs work good. The tagging works the same as in Firefox. The one drawback, and I don't really consider it a drawback too much anymore, is that it doesn't support the add-on features that Firefox and Internet Explorer do, like we were talking about earlier.
And they say that they're going to add that. Now, I don't know
they
if
say
that's
it, but
still
you know,
in
I'm
the...
concerned about when they do. The reason I stick with Chrome is that Chrome is fast.
And it's clean. And you do have to, we've both seen people that use Firefox in our recommendation, but they add so many things to it that it slows it down.
Right.
And now Firefox is also coming out with a new update very quickly called 3.5.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be much faster.
Yeah, it's supposed to speed it up quite a bit because it got a little slower from 2 to 3.
Yeah.
I think, don't you?
Yeah.
But they added some good features, but at the same
time... My love for Chrome is so strong right now that I've almost become a fanboy, and I almost won't change just because I won't change.
Now, speaking of fanboys and speaking of your love for Google, between last month's show and this month's show, there's been a new search engine on the Prowl, and it's called Bing, B-I-N-G, from Microsoft.
Right.
They repackaged and re-rolled out Live.com, which was their old
And I don't even consider them the same thing. Bing is so much different.
Right. Very pretty.
I like Bing a lot.
Very pretty. It's very fast.
Yep.
But I do have to say, I was with a customer today, and I installed Chrome, incidentally, for her, and she had Internet Explorer that had an MSN toolbar. Mm-hmm. And MSN updated the toolbar to this really pretty annoying Bing toolbar.
I've seen it.
And so she's been using the Bing toolbar. But we did a search for the same thing on Google and the same thing on Bing. And the first three items that came up on Bing for this particular search were 4 and 5 year old items that didn't apply anymore.
Right.
Whereas Google brought up the newest stuff first.
Right.
So I think it's a work in progress. It is pretty. It is fast. But I'm wondering if anybody out there is using it and how often they're using it, what kind of results they're getting from it, and do they still compare the results to their old search engine?
It's kind of a combination of three of the Google services combined. It kind of combines the Google Images with the Google News search and the Google Web search. And it kind of arranges those graphically. So I think that it's a fun search engine to use when I'm just curious what comes up. And it's certainly my second search engine that I go to.
And the photo search is very good.
Yeah.
And I like the way they arrange the photos. Mm-hmm. It's a little easier to read than the Google search.
I've been impressed with it, but not enough. It won't get me to switch from Google.
Well, not if you're that much in love with it, my goodness.
Well, that's Google Chrome. I'm in love with Google Chrome, not Google as a whole company.
Oh, okay.
Because I still chose my Palm Pre over the G1 cell phone.
Yeah, but that's because you're married to Sprint.
No, if it would have been cheaper, and I probably would have done it.
I'm just giving you a
I'm married to Sprint for the price rates.
Now, Palm, what we're talking about here is the newest Palm phone. They finally came out with a new phone after at least 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Probably at least 3 years.
Well,
that's a non-Windows.
I guess what I'm talking about is, you know, it's been 2 years or so since the Central came out, but since they've changed their operating system, it's been at least 6 years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're looking at the same. You may have changed the hardware and the shape of the phone, but it's been exactly the same phone.
Right.
The same experience using it for 6 years at least.
Right.
So
you've had yours now 2 weeks? No.
Yeah,
almost 2 weeks.
This is my Saturday. It was a week from Saturday. So we're almost 2 weeks. We're in the second week now.
So how's it going?
I'm loving it. I think it's really cool. The disadvantages aren't really that big of a deal. It does have, I guess, I don't know. It doesn't have the ability to add very many apps right now. There's about 30 applications out there that you can add onto it. That's going to grow. So I'm not, but the apps that are there are tremendous. I love them. The browsing is pretty good on it. It's, you know, it's certainly far and away better than, I'd put it as a close second to the iPhone, and in some cases superior to the iPhone. The fact that it has a tactile keyboard.
That's big.
In some cases, the BlackBerry beats the iPhone because the keyboard was so handy. Right. But having that tactile keyboard, you know, actually touch the keys while you're working with it. The other thing is I think that a lot of people who don't like the Palm Pre so far are people who don't understand the benefits of having a search-centric phone instead of a button-centric phone. With the iPhone, the BlackBerry, and the previous Palms, and the G1, with all of those current smartphones that are out there, when you want to go into a program, you go through the menu system and you find the program that you want to use. So if you want to go into your Twitter program, you have to go through and find that particular program or put it on a screen where you're used to finding it. And that's not the way the Palm Pre is designed. It will do that, but it's actually designed to go onto the keyboard and type in TW. And the first thing it does is it brings up a search screen, and the search screen has first your apps, then your contacts.
Is it always in that order?
Everything. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it brings them up in that order. And then, you know, the apps, whatever is highlighted, so you can hit the return key. So it's not even made to use the touch screen 100% of the time. It's made to use the keyboard. So it's, I wouldn't say it's keyboard centric, but it's definitely search centric. When you want to get to something, it does a weird thing. It pulls in, if you have it do it, it's an optional thing, but you can have it bring in all your Facebook contacts, all of your Outlook contacts, and all of your Gmail contacts.
And it combines all of them?
It combines them all in one place. And for people who
it synchronizes, does it synchronize to each individual place?
Yep.
Okay.
And now the weird thing is, a lot of people who are used to the iPhone and used to the other phones out there, that's really annoying because it means you're scrolling through 6 pages of C you're trying to find somebody. But that's not the way the Pre is designed. It's designed for you to type in the last name of the person you're looking for, and then it will bring up.
And only takes the first few characters.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, you just type in the first
couple.
Can
you still
characters.
Put the first and last initial?
Uh-huh.
Like we could with the Trio?
Yep.
And that was always big.
So you can put in the first, and it just has a lot of those benefits. And the return key is enter, the space bar brings up the menu. I mean, it has all these shortcuts for the keyboard, too. And I think they're going to increase those.
So you're still probably learning some of the things.
I'm still learning the stuff to it, but what I'd really like is they've done a lot of iPhone. Pretty much everything I like about the iPhone is incorporated in it. Mm-hmm. And everything I love about the iPhone, it's all there. I don't miss the iPhone features at all. The Palm features are the ones I miss most because I loved on the Palm just how easy it was to get around to everything I wanted to without even touching the screen. I could hit a little D-pad and move around everywhere I wanted to go. And and rarely had to touch the screen unless it was something I wanted to, like a game or something like that, where touching the screen was critical to it. And so I hope that over further updates that they start incorporating more keyboard shortcuts to getting around in it. But I mean, those are little things. I mean, the GPS is incredible.
You ought to see if you can, like in our Trio and our Centro, you could assign, by holding down one letter, you could assign a hotkey.
I haven't found anything like that. There's a few things like that. It's very limited on its customizations. There's very few things I can do to customize it. And that's, you know, that's one of my complaints about it. But, you know, it's really changed me back to being more of a cell phone user outside of it than the PDA side.
Right.
But it's
our
really
phone number,
good.
By the way, is 970-241-8801, extension 1. You're listening to Rick and Adam on the Noontime Public Affairs show here on KAFM 88.1 Grand Junction, Colorado. Call us with your questions and about anything computer-related or phone-related. You've heard Adam and I talk for years about smartphones, and we were probably some of the first people in this area to use smartphones on a regular basis. And I think now you're seeing more and more people are carrying smartphones, but not necessarily knowing what to do with them. I see a lot of people carrying Blackberries. I see a lot of people starting to carry some of the new, the Windows-based ones, which I'm never thrilled with. And then some of the offbeat ones like the HTC
Touch.
The Touch.
Yeah, the Touch and the Touch Pro. A lot of the HTC
phones. And
they
have a proprietary.
No,
what's their
system? It's actually Windows Mobile, but they put a different shell on it. Okay. But there is Symbian, which is what Nokia and a lot of those use,
and the new Nokia phones.
Yeah, Nokia makes some great stuff, and the Symbian operating system is very nice. But
been around
it's not,
a long time,
not supported by all carriers, and it is more of a, you know, they have their following for sure, but it's hard. It's not necessarily the one that you want to adapt to if you're wanting to do a lot of different things with your phone.
But I think I read something not long ago that almost any phone you get probably within the next 5 years is going to be a smartphone.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to buy, or it's going to be very difficult to buy, a cellular telephone that only makes phone calls.
Well, if you think about it, most of your cell phones that you get even now have a calendar in it and a reminder system. They have those basic things, usually even a small little
and
web
even
browser.
And even their contact managers allows you to save more information than just a phone number.
Yeah, exactly.
You can save multiple phone numbers, addresses, birth dates.
Right. So that's the essence of a smartphone. I guess we look at different degrees of smartphone. Beyond that is how many other things can you do with it? And how much more do you use it as a computer device? You know, I think it should be on this scale of the closeness of cell phone versus laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these smartphones almost replace a laptop for most of their use because you can email and do internet and all of that with it. And some of them are much more like a cell phone where you wouldn't want to spend an hour surfing the web with them. So
right.
That's where it tends to vary.
So we probably bore people sometimes with smartphone talk, but we love them. We use them daily. They make my business possible. My day would probably be 12 hours longer if I did not have a smartphone.
I agree.
And the smarter the phone gets, the more efficient I get.
Yeah,
which is beautiful. I love that. I love efficiency.
A couple days ago, just to give you an idea of how I would use the smartphone, I was trying to find a certain business location, so I typed it into Google Maps. And Google Maps synchronizes with the GPS that's built into my phone. It's a real GPS.
Yep.
And it showed me where the business was on my Google Maps and showed me where I was. And from there, I could either say, map me and show me how to get there.
Right.
Or I could go into the real GPS application and have it direct me there. Or I could just look at it and I knew how to do it. Or I could say, give me printed directions and it would write them out. So, that's something as simple as that.
And yeah. People don't realize especially when they're traveling, that if you had that kind of power in your hand, you would be able to, you don't have any problems when you're traveling.
Yeah.
You can find restaurants, you can find your hotel.
Right.
If you're lost, you can look up something. And these things get easier and easier on the phone. A lot of people feel a little bit overwhelmed when they see all these features and hear about all these features. But as you get to use them, it is not difficult, and they make it as straightforward as they can. Excuse me. And it just makes it a wonderful experience to travel with these things because when you're on the road, well, your wife traveled to Oregon recently with her Centro.
Yep.
Yeah. Did she use it?
She used her Centro to post her postings on Facebook, post pictures on Facebook, text me, call me, send email.
Did she use it to look anything up for things
to
do?
You know what? I didn't ask her, but it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, she knows she does it fairly often. So.
Right. And it's just to me that if you're not using a smartphone and you're a frequent traveler, I think you're really missing out.
The pre, and I know that the iPhone has tons of apps like this, but the pre just added in a flight tracking program, so you can look at your flight and mm-hmm. even hit a little radar button, and it shows you exactly where the flight is in the air and when it's exactly expected to arrive. And you can type in the tail number of any airplane, and it'll show you where that plane is and who owns it. And
that'll make some everything cringe.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty well. I mean, it's all public information. You can look it up however you want.
It's there.
There's a lot of cool things out there that you can do with it.
No, I was just thinking in the back of my head about another browser issue. Yes. Oh, we were talking that a friend of mine on Twitter mm-hmm. earlier today gave me a link to a YouTube video, and we were talking about browsers in the earlier part of the hour. And one of the most common, well, I shouldn't say most common, but a frequent statement I hear from a lot of people is that I'm too old to learn computers,
yeah.
or that young people understand computers much better than I do.
I didn't grow up with this the way you did.
Right.
Yeah.
And this video that was sent to me today was a video made by Google where they went into downtown New York City in Manhattan, and they had a man on the street with a microphone and a cameraman, and they interviewed people all day long, and they only asked them one question: do you know what a browser is? And they had just clips of all these people throughout the day. Probably 75 to 80% of them were, I would consider, young, 40 and under. And only 8% of the entire day they spent on the streets, only 8% of the people they talked to knew what a browser was.
Yeah.
And so that did two things for me. One is the most common response, and I don't know what this guy was wearing because I couldn't see his whole getup. But the most common response when they asked the question, what is a browser, was Google. Google's a browser.
Right.
And I thought, wow, Google. That's kind of like what AOL used to be.
They don't know
the
difference between a search engine and a browser. Yeah, right.
But I think that dispels the myth right then and there. Don't trust me. Trust what you see in true living color, is that you do not have to be young to understand technology, because the young folks do not understand technology any better than the older folks.
Right.
And I'll stand by that to my grave.
Yep.
Because I work with it every day. Now, young people will use technology.
I think it's
more.
A confidence, not an expertise. Young people have a confidence with technology. They sit down and they're not afraid to use it. They don't even conceive being afraid of it.
Right.
They sit down and they play with it till they figure it out, because they know that there's a way to get it done. I think that there's another group of people out there that are just at the opposite end of the scale, and they don't have the confidence, and they assume that it can't be done. So they try it a little bit and then give up, or they say, oh, it's too hard, it can't be done. Younger people, I think, with anything, I don't think it's just computers. I think with anything, they assume it has to be able, you have to be able to do this, and they keep picking at it till they figure out a way to get it done.
But they don't necessarily understand it.
No. Yeah. And a lot of their picking causes a lot of problems, too, mm-hmm. and we end up cleaning those off. So it's not an expertise, and it's not something you should necessarily envy. It's just something that you can learn from them that you...
Don't let it be a roadblock. Don't be a roadblock to your own learning, because it's truly not a roadblock that's there. It's an imaginary, fictitious roadblock. All right, 970-241-8801, extension 1 is our phone number. Give us a call at that number if you have any more computer questions. We're here for about another 15 or so minutes. Or you can give us a Twitter question. We had one at the beginning of the hour. I actually had two. I had another gentleman who asked me how my smash burger was.
Oh, yes.
But you can Twitter us at Talking Digital or at Help Me Rick, and we can answer those questions via that.
It's something spooky. I just posted on Twitter that we're doing the radio show, and I tagged on it. I said, locate where I am and post a link to where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
Posted on Twitter, puts a little link in there. They click on it, and they actually get a street view of the radio station, like an actual photo. Isn't that incredible?
Did it have the new... improved landscaping?
No, this
out
is
in front?
Probably about a year old.
Oh,
it's an older picture, but still.
Because the new improved landscaping looks great out
it
in
does,
front of 88.1.
Yeah. Really, you wouldn't even know it's the same building.
So that was that, or was it a picture probably from the Google drive-by?
From Google Maps, from Google Street View. So it just, well, it's located on a Google map, and then at an inset had a picture of the building.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that cool?
And the Street View, I think they did that from looking at the
looks
pictures.
Looks like about a year or two ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking last year, because they just put them up live.
I think legally it has to be a year or older.
Oh, does it?
I think.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure of that.
They can't be too current.
Right. You heard the story. I don't know if you remember when it happened. We put it in the newsletter a long time ago when the military got upset at Google Earth, because mm-hmm. when you zoomed in on this particular palace of Hussein, one of Hussein's palace, you know, there's all these army tanks parked out there. And the military said, you're showing where we're parking our tanks. You can't do that. And Google said, those maps are 2 years old. Move your tanks once in a while. And that was pretty much the end of it. Basically, the military was admitting that they hadn't moved their tanks in 2 years where they'd parked them. So
I thought that was really never mind. All right. 970-241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. HelpMeRick.com is the website. We have lots of good tips up there. If you want to visit the site, and you should visit the site regularly to learn more about your computer and technology in general. One thing we talked about last month, and it continues to happen, is I am continuing to see a large exodus of people from Windows to Mac.
Yep.
Are you still seeing that with your clients?
Not quite as much, but I think I'm hearing it more. And you know what's happening is people are doing it more, and then I'm finding out after the fact.
Right.
I'm going to their house, and all of a sudden there's a Mac there, and they're using it, and they want me to help them with their PC. So.
Right. Yeah, because they'll hang on to it sometimes.
Yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, people are buying Macs. I was glad to see just last night. I was kind of late to the game. I didn't really kind of look when they announced all the new MacBook laptops, but they finally added an SD card slot.
Pretty crazy,
to the MacBook Pros.
Yeah.
Not the MacBooks.
And they introduced a 13-inch MacBook Pro,
I like
too.
That. And a reasonable price.
What was it? I didn't see what price is.
$11.99 and $14.99.
Oh, for a MacBook Pro? Mm-hmm. That's not bad at all.
That's very good. Yeah. 160-gig
so
hard drive.
So then what does that do to the MacBooks? Because that was the MacBook price. They were $12.99. So.
I don't know why.
Maybe there is no MacBook anymore. Maybe they just spray painted it because the MacBook's silver now, so maybe they just call it the MacBook Pro and increase it. Who knows? The one thing I was going to say too, as far as buying a Mac, if you are a college student or high school student or a teacher, because I'm going to be buying my Mac in the next couple months probably because I need it for
teaching.
You
buying a laptop or a desktop?
I'm probably going to buy an iMac.
Okay.
The more I think about it, I was going to buy a mini, but I may get an iMac. I don't know.
But not a laptop. You're definitely not going to.
I won't get
a laptop.
No. Okay. No. But the thing with the Mac right now is if you get one of their standard Macs, the iMac or the MacBooks or MacBook Pros, they throw in an 8-gigabyte iPod Touch in with it too.
Oh, right.
So that's kind of cool.
For the students and teachers.
Yeah. And they also mark the Macs are usually about $100 or more off the price of what they would be normally, too.
I think it's $50 on the laptop and $100 on the desktops, I think.
So, you know, if you're thinking about getting an iPod anyway, that's like getting $100 off your Mac and a free iPod. So.
And that's what, a $200 or $300 value?
Yeah. About $300, yeah.
Yeah. So that's very good. That's a good deal. And you can run on those iPod Touches.
Yeah.
Since I'm now an iPhone fanboy.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm not quite a fanboy, but I do like it.
You would change if something better comes along,
I would,
right?
I would.
See, that's how I'm with Google Chrome. It would be hard to get me to change even if something
But the
better.
iPod Touch does everything the iPhone does except make phone calls.
Right.
And so it's a great little deal.
Unless you put the Skype application on it, then you can even make phone calls.
I know, and that's really cool. Apparently it works pretty well.
From what I've heard,
I have not tried
you have to use it on Wi-Fi, but that's the way the iPod Touch works.
Have you tried do you put Skype on your iPod?
Skype. No, I didn't ever.
You didn't try
it? No,
I didn't try it either. I did put an article just up on the website at helpmerick.com last night. I put an article up about my applications I've added to my iPhone since I bought it last August. I've added 42 applications, and that seems like a big number, but it pales in comparison to what a lot of people have on their iPhones. And as I went through it, I said, man, I'm either one cheap SOB or I found a lot of good free applications because probably 85% of my applications were free.
Yeah.
But I did buy a few expensive ones, a $10 password one.
Wow.
And Splash ID.
Uh-huh.
But it's great. I love it.
Right. I put it on my pre, but I haven't played with it yet.
Splash ID?
Uh-huh.
Oh, they've already got one for pre. Well, they were a Palm company
to
begin with.
They are a Palm company,
yeah. So that's very cool. They came out with one already. Did you have to pay for it or is it a freebie?
It's free right now.
Okay.
Pretty much everything is free right now. It's all in beta. On the pre.
But then when they charge, you'll get charged?
No, I get to choose whether I want to buy it at that time. But
I mean, but will it be full price or because you bought the beta will it be reduced?
I don't have any idea. The beta was free, so I just don't know.
So the pre is still kind of an experiment.
It is still an experiment, and it's a fun experiment, though.
Yeah. I like it. It's a great-looking phone. If you have not seen the Palm Pre, do they have one that you can go
they
look at?
They have one in the Palm store or in the Sprint store that you can look at. Yeah.
It's worth looking at.
I don't know whether
they
have anything any to buy, but they definitely have them to look at.
Because they did a good job with the design.
Yeah, I think so,
and
too.
And with most phones, you always kind of wonder how they designed the phone, and you're not sure if it just looks quite right. It looks kind of too industrial.
Mm-hmm.
When the iPhone came out, it was very slick. That was one of the things people liked about it.
Yeah.
And I think that the Palm very much nailed the industrial design of the phone. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. I think it's wonderful to use. It has its little quirky things. The keyboard is strange, but I think the keyboard is 100 times better than the iPhone keyboard.
Now, what do you find strange about it? Are you having trouble?
Your top row of keys is a little bit too close to the upper lip of the phone. It slides out, so
it won't pull out far.
It's kind of a tight fit there. But again, I'm still accurate. You know, I can still type 5 sentences on it without making a mistake. So it's not like the iPhone where I'm guessing at where I'm putting my thumbs. The other thing, it's too slick. I would really like it if they would have either rubberized it or put some sort of grip towards the bottom of the screen, because you separate it. It actually slides out.
And because of the slider, it's
too slick to use. I would almost like it to be rubberized towards the bottom so I could push it up and slide it back without.
No, because of the slider, though, you almost can't add a rubberized.
No, but you could see underneath that.
Oh, right here. There,
you could probably add a little bit of rubber or something right there, or even texture to the surface to make it so it slides out a little easier.
I gotcha.
So there's little things like that. But the other thing, too, the camera on the Pre has a flash. And let me tell you, that sounds like a gimmick, but it is really cool. I even use it in the daytime. The flash just washes out the shadows. It lightens things up a little bit. We were in the theater, and I got a couple decent pictures in the dark theater of my kids wearing their 3D glasses when we went to go see Up. So, it's pretty slick.
It's a gimmick.
I have a lot of fun. Yeah. It works, though.
No, I like it. And Adam, one thing that he talked about, and I didn't really see the benefit of it until you showed it to me, was background applications. Because most of us should be. If you're not, you should be. Multitasking on your desktop. You should have more than one program open. Very rarely are there situations where you're only working in one program, even if it's solitaire at the same time your email. But on phones, most of the time you have to get out of one application to get into another one.
Yeah.
And this is the very first phone, isn't it?
This is the first, as far as I know, I don't even think the G1 or the Google phone even supports it to this degree. This is really slick. What it does is it makes it so, let's say you're in your contacts and you want to look something up in Google Maps. You can just shrink your contacts and go to your Google Maps and keep your contacts exactly where you have them. Look something up on Google Maps and then, go over to your, who knows whatever other program you have. Pandora is a good example. I can open up Pandora, which is an internet radio station. I can be listening to Pandora, shrink Pandora down, and then go use my phone and as a regular, play game on it or do whatever. So it really, the multiple applications is, I think, its killer feature out of everything else that it does.
It does, I think. I've got a feeling that if that continues to succeed as far as people like that feature, I bet we'll see it on the iPhone soon.
I hope so, but iPhone, they're very protective of their background applications.
Well, but apparently they opened it up quite a bit with the new version.
Right. Well, when you open up background applications, you open up the door for viruses. Mm-hmm. That's just a hand-in-hand thing, and hacking and all of that. So you really, it is something to be aware of.
All right, well, 970-241-8801, extension 1. This has been Phone Talk and a little bit of browser talk at the top of the hour. But we do have a few more minutes if you want to squeeze in one last question, either via @TalkingDigital or @HelpMeRick. We can answer those questions via Twitter or, again, the phone number 970-241-8801, extension 1 is that phone number. Now, Adam, you probably saw that we did have TweetDeck got released for the iPhone.
I'm jealous. I'm jealous of that one.
Let's see, I do have, hold on a second, Adam.
In fact, TweetDeck, I taught a Twitter class recently to a bunch of people in the city, the police department, a few people who do marketing and PR for the city, and some people who work for Parks and Rec. And as I was teaching that Twitter class, I found that I can't really teach the benefits and wonders of Twitter without showing TweetDeck. It wasn't supposed to be a TweetDeck class, but TweetDeck really helps you use Twitter as an actual
tool,
not just something where you're reading about what Oprah's doing today or whatever. It's
so what is TweetDeck? Explain what TweetDeck
is. TweetDeck is a program that searches through, it shows you multiple panes at one time. So you can go into Twitter and you can see everything that your friends are saying on Twitter, everything that people have replied to you, all of your direct messages, and then you can add as many search terms as you want. So I always keep a search term open for Grand Junction, I also have a search term, a pane opened up for the Palm Pre, because everybody's talking a lot about it, and it kind of keeps me up on the Pre news.
Mm-hmm.
Just anything that's going on. I was searched the other day. I did Iran protests, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Searched that, just watched what people were saying about that.
There's been a lot of that.
A lot of it. And so you just, anything that's going on in the news, and it really changes Twitter from being something where you have to, labor intensive. When you go into Twitter, you feel like, okay, I have to search for this term, see what people are saying. And it's too labor intensive. With TweetDeck, you can just open it up and see everything all at one time that people are doing.
Well, and the other thing I just found out about TweetDeck that I'm going to start utilizing is I always wonder how these people can manage following thousands of people.
Right.
And what you can do in TweetDeck is create groups.
Yeah.
And you can create groups of people of just your true people you want to hear.
You can do it in Twitter, too. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then that way you can make and sort out your information a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But you're talking about the Iran
protests. Yeah.
They shut down Twitter in Iran. They shut down YouTube. And they did all these things. But on Twitter, a lot of people are changing. Did you see this today?
They're changing all their information.
They're changing their time zone.
Penn Jillette. That was Penn Jillette's thing. I noticed that last night that he was pushing for that. And I retweeted
that. Your time zone to be looking like you're in Iran.
Right.
And that way the government in Iran can't figure out which one is traffic from their country and where the other traffic's coming from. Without looking a little harder, they can do it.
Yeah.
But it certainly makes it harder.
Makes it frustrating.
If everybody's in the same time zone.
Poor Iran.
Yeah, I feel sorry for him. All right. Well, we are almost out of time. We have our next, and we will be back again next month on the third Wednesday of the month for the Noontime KAFM Public Affairs Radio Show. And in the meantime, you can visit helpmerick.com you can also Twitter us or follow us on Twitter @helpmerick or @talkingdigital. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next month.